T.C. Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hale, author, natural health bird. Natural health expert, producer, and a bunch of other stuff. What's up, TC?
Hello, Elfbert.
Elfbert. And we also have Will Hottie Patati Schmidt, who's also an Elfbert.
Howdy.
How you doing?
Good. And we have Kenna here, but only barely.
Yeah, I'm not really here. I'm not an Elfbert.
She almost died today because of her Blade protein shake.
Oh, yeah. I was drinking a protein shake.
Yeah.
And the Blade came off.
Is that why your tongue isn't working right?
Yeah. Weird one. Yeah, I cut my tongue out. No, but seriously, if I had swallowed that.
That's insane.
That would have been freaky. I've never thought of that way to die. That would
have been painful coming out.
Wow. Yeah. And I would have blamed you from the other side.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
It wasn't my blunder, though.
Mm-hmm. This is your first... If this is your first time... What's up with me today, guys?
A lot of stuff.
I don't know. If this is your first time here, and as TC is...
He's right here. That's all
he's
we got.
He's right here. Yeah. He's good. I was going to give a whole spiel about him, but we won't even do that.
We got a long show.
Yeah. So, but go ahead and do like us on Facebook at Kick It In The Nuts. That's where we post topics every single week, what we'll be doing on future shows. And if you guys post any questions you want us to cover on that show, we'll go ahead and cover that. And you'll get your name mentioned. And
you'll be famous.
Yeah. We'll be talking about you and your poop on the air.
All 11 of our listeners will hear your
name. Exactly.
And it'll be your 15 minutes.
And then they'll be thinking about every single Michelle who's constipated.
Right.
You know. If you like audiobooks, you're going to love our sponsor. Audible.com is giving all of our listeners a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day membership. Go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook to find the link so you guys can get yours.
The free book that Kenna got was How to Sound Like an Announcer.
That's right. Is it working?
It's working.
Cool. All right, so today's topic is kidney stones or gallstones, and I've never had those, but I hear they're painful from all the comments.
It's almost the worst thing that has ever existed in anyone's life ever.
Yeah, except people are like, I'd rather have 20 kids. Except
blade shakes are the whole thing that are worse.
That's the worst. Try a blade shake, people, and then tell me if your gallstone's painful.
But kidney stones are caused by eating kidney beans.
Oh, okay.
I don't know, why haven't they figured this out? It's right there in the name.
Yeah, and why don't people just stop eating stones?
Yeah,
don't eat stones. Don't eat rocks. It's not good for you.
No, kidney beans actually do not cause kidney stones, but wouldn't that be funny if that was it and nobody could figure that out?
Yeah,
no brainer.
Cool. I wonder if you could grow a kidney bean in your stomach. It's in your stomach, and I don't know.
It's a good question.
I'm glad we started out with that question. Yeah, I've got a bunch of questions today.
Well, let's start with a little bit about kidney stones, and then we'll get into the gallstone stuff a little bit later. But the kidney stone topic is super confusing, and nobody agrees on anything, and they just want to fight about it.
It's kind of like Congress.
It's similar to that. And meanwhile, everybody's over balled up in the fetal position in pain because they have kidney stones. But the issue is that there's a lot of different causes, and even the stones can be made up of different stuff. It can be made up of
blender blades.
Blender blades. I got a case of blender blade stones that I cannot pass. But they can be made from uric acid and oxalate and all these different things. So people can have them caused by a lot of different reasons, and that's why everybody likes to argue about what's going on. So a lot of times if you have kidney stones, the first step is to
admit you have to admit,
and then you have to apologize to like 12 people.
Yeah, exactly.
They have to apologize.
Yelled at while you had
right. But the thing is to catch one, like they give you a screen to pee in. You pee through the screen so that you can catch a stone. Then they can analyze the stone and say, okay, this is made of calcium phosphate, or this is more of a uric acid situation going on. And then you can kind of get an idea of what your cause is. But today we really want to focus a lot on a major thing that nobody talks about at all.
Let me guess. digestion?
No.
Tom Selleck?
Yeah, nobody ever talks about Tom Selleck anymore. So we want to focus this show on Tom Selleck.
Oh, I'm all for it. I love Magnum P.I.
Yeah, I saw him walk up to the... There's a recording studio above our gym, and he was walking up there, and he was still, like, so dreamy. His mustache.
Oh, you didn't text me? Like, oh, riffling. My gosh. Yeah. I would have totally been there in a second. Yeah.
It was about a year ago, but his stash, it was still... He had a dreamy mustache still.
You should do that every morning before we work out, and I'll be there on time, I bet.
Oh, I bet that
would. If you hurry, and you're here in the next 5 minutes, Tom Selleck just went up.
But the situation is that what happens is there's all this stuff in the body that the kidneys are responsible for removing and filtering out. So a lot of this stuff moves through the kidneys. And when that liquid becomes concentrated, then these substances are closer together. They're allowed to kind of hang out near each other, where if it was more diluted, they would not be so close together. And when that happens, then they can kind of start to connect. And when anything connects, all of a sudden, it's like everybody wants to hang out with that, and that's when the stones can start to form. So
The Rolling Stones. That's what happened to them, you know?
That's why they became so popular, exactly. Is because of high uric acid. So the big issue that a lot of people look over is that why is the urine so concentrated and why isn't more water going through the kidneys so that this the liquid is not so concentrated? Because that's the main issue. You know, there's all these things that people say, oh, well, if you do this, then you won't get kidney stones. And, oh, it's because of all this, you know, oxalate and all this uric acid. But... if you look at it like this, like a bullet, like if you have a handful of bullets, they're really not that dangerous. Like I could throw them at you, and at worst, you're just going to be annoyed, or maybe I might poke you in the eye.
If you swallow them.
Yeah, you can swallow them.
Put them in your shake.
Yeah. Uh-huh, put them in your shake. And a gun is the same way. It's not that dangerous. I could hit you on the head with a gun, but it's not dangerous unless you put the bullets in the gun, and now you have a situation. So... a lot of these things that people are up in arms about with kidney stones would not be an issue if there was more water going through the kidneys. But it's not just a matter of drinking more water for a lot of people. It could be a matter of where your body is sending water. Go, Will.
Okay, so when you're in what we have talked about on pretty much every episode previous, in a catabolic imbalance... more of the water that you consume goes through your colon, and less of it is partitioned through the kidneys. So you have less water flow going through that system to clear it out, which would allow for the accumulation of junk, all sorts of different kinds of junk. So you may not even have more uric acid being produced or consumed in your body. You may just not be clearing it out at an efficient rate.
Right. So it's not always about the amount of water that you're drinking. It's like what's going on with that water in your body.
Mm-hmm.
But for a lot of people, I mean, we see clients all the time and looking at their physiology, and it's like, have you seen water ever? Because you can just tell they're not drinking anything, and you ask them and they're like, well, I just had 3 cups of coffee. You know, but that's not water. You know, people aren't drinking water. They're drinking soda and think that that counts as water. So for a lot of people, it is a matter of, hey, why don't you drink some water? You know, try that out.
Could be helpful.
Right. See what that does. But for just as many people, it's more of an issue of what is your body doing with water. So we teach in our free digestive course on kickitinthenuts.com how to look at your physiology and figure out, do I have a catabolic imbalance? And is my body sending too much water to the wrong place? But even beyond that, a simple thing could just be just pee in a cup and look at it. And if you feel like you could paint the wall because it's so yellow and it's so thick, you know, then that's not very
thick.
Diluted urine.
Oh, wow. I've never seen thick pee.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it just looks thick.
Oh, okay. So, like, somebody like myself who's anabolic and stuff and who's, you know, electrolyte deficient, if I had gallstones, what would be the cause of that? Because I always have to drink less water because I flush myself out too much.
Well, gallstones would be different. We're talking about kidney stones here.
Oh, okay.
Jeez, I'm a nettie.
Okay.
So, that's a really important thing that you brought up, because a lot of people are not drinking a lot of water, but they've figured out that they feel better when they don't drink water. So they're doing that whether it's subconscious or on purpose, and if they were to increase their water intake, they would feel lousy. Maybe Will could explain to us why.
Yeah, because for like you, like other people in an electrolyte deficient imbalance, the more water that you pour in, the more dispersed all the sediment become, like your electrolytes and that sort of thing. So the less conductivity there is, as you create more space with not enough minerals, so you become the blood in your system becomes even more dilute, which is already too dilute because you're in this electrolyte deficient state. So your body would on purpose not trigger the thirst reflex. Like you wouldn't feel like, oh, I want to drink more water, because it knows it's trying to keep a certain amount of charge and density in the blood.
And you may learn that, you know, I feel better if I don't drink a lot of water.
Yeah. Because there's this really important thing that the body is regulating, and it knows it's like at the top of the hierarchy of things that your body is trying to keep in homeostasis is your blood being spread out or not collapsing together. Like Tony, you were talking about before, different particles liking to hang out together, like uric acid crystals, like accumulating or whatever. But the blood is trying to do this opposite thing of staying a colloidal suspension where the blood cells are separate.
Everything's dispersed.
Yeah. Right? And it's really, really important that there's the right charge called zeta potential, which is an electromagnetic thing that happens when the blood is balanced in such a way where it can stay in suspension and all the blood cells don't like all of a sudden clot together. When your electrolyte levels get like too high and you have like too many cations to anions and it falls out of that correct electromagnetic range, your blood will collapse and you'll get a heart attack. Or if it gets too low, you can get a seizure. Either way, like the body's doing everything it can to regulate and keep the proper zeta potential or electromagnetic charge in the bloodstream. So that diminished thirst thing is that you would feel if you're electrolyte deficient is your body making a big priority about trying to keep your blood liquidy.
Liquidy.
Yeah.
That's the scientific term. Mm-hmm. That's how we like to roll. So for someone who has low blood pressure, but they're having kidney stone issues, you know, drinking more water may be important, but they first need to qualify to drink more water, and they need to figure out, you know, why is blood pressure so low? And, I mean, we've probably only had one podcast where we didn't talk about that. Mm. But you can learn about that in the digestion course, too, and how to look at your physiology. But then if you can work to raise and get more minerals in there, then you qualify to drink more water, and then more water can move through the kidneys be a deterrent in the storms forming.
And that 4-week free digestion course is at kickitinthenuts.com.
True that.
So you can take it there and find out what's going on with you.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about something else that happens a lot of times with people with low electrolytes, but let's get into questions first, and we'll I think because somebody asked some questions about that, and we'll throw it into there.
Paula from West Palm Beach, Florida. Very painful. Easier having kids. Wow.
Which I hear is pretty painful.
Yeah.
But it is, if you've never experienced, it's probably the worst pain that are gallstones or some of the worst pains that there are. And like when you're going through it, it's like if somebody told me shaving my head right now would fix it, I would be very happy to do that, because it's like ball up in the fetal position, throw up because you're in so much pain, and then just cry like a little girl.
Mm, wow. Well, Fred in Austin, Texas says, I can attest to that. Not fun at all. Has Fred had a child or something?
Yes.
Yeah. Does she mean having kids, like going in labor, like having like 18 years worth of
labor?
Like,
yeah.
Actually yeah, labor, having. Because she's probably like 18 years. That,
I would rather have a kidney stone.
Oh. Sharon from Los Angeles, California. Oh, yeah, I remember passing out from the pain. Not as bad as chicken pox, but a close second.
We have some debate about level of badness.
Well, I don't remember chicken pox, but I do have scars from chicken pox, and I have a place where my eyelashes won't grow now.
Wow.
Because of chicken pox.
Because of chicken pox, and I have to dot it in with my eyeliner. It's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, I don't have that problem. I don't dot things in.
No, okay. Joanne, I would take having 23 hours of labor all over again than having kidney stones ever. It's the devil's worst pain he can endure on the body. I had them when I was 5 months pregnant and had to be hospitalized. Ironically, the same child now needs surgery to have gallstones taken out 16 years later.
So I guess Joanne is like, he had it coming. Well,
yeah, exactly.
Revenge. Mm-hmm. All we've had so far is just like people. Testaments about how bad it is.
Yeah. Right. And now we understand that the devil.
That it's bad.
And the devil causes.
And the devil causes.
What causes kidney stone?
Kidney beans and the devil. Cause kidney stone.
So Laura from Seattle, Washington. Kidney stones seem to run in my family. My brother, sister, and I have reoccurring stones every 2 to 3 years. Other than genetics, what are we doing that causes them to keep coming back? And what can we do to prevent them? Thanks.
I don't know. Next question.
No. But, pray to God instead of Satan, yeah. Apparently.
But you do hear... that awesome. We're awesome. Our show is religious now. That's
fantastic. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's talk about politics too.
Right. Yeah. But you know, you hear a lot of people that it's a genetic thing, and my mom had them, so I have them too, and that's just how it goes. And I don't buy into that almost at all. And I do think that you know, there's genetic things can point you towards dysfunction and things that can go on in the body, but that doesn't mean that you are destined to have kidney stones. You can still adjust things so that you're not dealing with what's creating them. So if it's a problem that you're having every 2 to 3 years, then you should be able to look at your physiology, and something is probably going to be screaming out, hey, I'm a kidney stone maker kind of thing. And if you've had them that many times, you probably know what they're made of, and because maybe you have some on the mantle in your fireplace or something, if you've had that many. And once you know what it is, then you can start looking at, okay, why is so much calcium phosphate going through my kidneys or uric acid or whatever the stone is made of, and you can start to get an idea of what you need to do to avoid having them. But the first question is, what's going on with water? Number one, are you drinking it? And number two, do you pee enough of it, or is it going out the back door a lot of the time? So that's important to figure out, do I have a catabolic imbalance, and are things I can do that would push more water through the kidneys so it's not so concentrated?
And as far as genetics, I mean, my father had red hair, and now I have red hair. So what could I do about that, Tony?
Right. Well, that's not because of your father. It's because of Satan. You keep coloring in your eyelash from that chicken pox, and it spreads to your hair, and now your hair is red.
Okay.
Yeah, so things like that. That was when I was thinking about this question. I was like, you know, now somebody has red hair. That's a genetic thing. They really got that.
Yeah.
And we can get genes that are handed to us that predispose us to... may have chemistry to go in one direction, but you can always take steps to improve that.
Yeah, I think it's called like the MR1 something gene or something that predisposes you to be a redhead. I mean, it's like I'm a mutant, basically. It's a mutated gene.
Wow.
So there you go.
Right. So
that explains me.
It does.
One thing that I really like people to do first off, if they're having kidney stone issues, is I want them to look at their urine pH. Because if their urine pH is high, like over 6.3, that's an indication that you're peeing out a lot of calcium. So let's look at a couple reasons why somebody would be peeing out so much calcium, and maybe why they would have so much calcium floating around. Do you want to talk about anything like that?
Sure. There's lots of things that could push it up. Like... if you're on the D3 train, like if you're supplementing with D3.
Because all the cool kids are on vitamin D, you're going to take it too.
Yeah, because it's... Yeah.
Oh, I thought Nina was looking at you because you were swinging back and forth, so that's why I stopped
you.
Well,
no. If you're taking a lot of D3, like these mega doses that are often recommended, it's a calcium magnet vacuum, like you like to say, calcium vacuum. So it will just pull calcium from everywhere, from your bones and your muscles and your nerves and your food also. And you'll see that in a really high urine pH because it's that calcium's being peed out, and calcium's very alkaline. So that's one thing that could cause excess calcium to be accumulating.
Right.
As well as sugar. Sugar does that too.
I was just about to ask.
I know. When
sugar.
Are we going to rip on sugar?
Yeah. I was just transcribing some stuff from earlier shows about calcium following sugar.
Yeah.
So I keep my calcium busy.
Right. Uh-huh. So if you're on like a juice cleanse, even like a green juice cleanse, like that could do it. Or if you eat a lot of starches or eat regular white sugar, like Cheerio.
Soda. Yeah, all that kind of stuff.
Anything.
All that will pull like valuable electrolytes, including calcium and chloride and stuff, out of your cells and into your pee that you'll lose.
Right, because it holds it in the blood and makes the blood calcium retentive. And you even find things when you go to research kidney stones that a lot of people say that people that use a lot of vitamin D are more susceptible to kidney stones. And it totally makes sense to us because we talk all the time about how vitamin D really works. You're not just improving your calcium intake. You're not only pulling calcium in through the food with that vitamin D, but you're also sucking it up from everywhere. So now the calcium levels go really high. And the body says, I can't have all of this calcium here, so I'm going to pee a bunch of it out.
What if you drank your pee?
If you drank your pee, you'd double your calcium, you know?
Oh,
if
you're okay. Peeing out okay. Because I had a woman, a teacher, that used to drink her pee for her allergies.
Right. There's a lot of people that use that as a therapy.
It's disgust.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and not drink my pee,
okay,
if you don't mind.
Good.
But this is one of the first things I like to look at, because it's just common for people to be dealing with chronic kidney stones over and over again because they're just peeing out so much calcium and it's so concentrated in the urine that, sure, sooner or later some of it's going to clump together and form a little stone and you're going to scream.
Yeah, and that can cause other problems too, like we had a recent episode about arthritis and how calcium is accumulated in that same way in your interstitial fluid space, like in your joints and things like that. And this is also like super tied into heart disease. When you get when your blood collapses, like that's a problem. And a really great book to read about that, if you're more interested in the kind of deeper science of this, is Disease Reprieve, Living Into Your Golden Years by T.C. McDaniels, where he talks all about...
Oh, another T.C.
Yeah, right?
Oh, I forgot about him.
He's your great, great cousin.
I was named after him.
Yeah. But it's an epic book where he talks all about how all this stuff works at the electromagnetic level.
Right, but so all those things, like if calcium gets deposited in joints and causes pain, or uric acid can create issues like gout.
Okay? Choking on water, sir.
Oh. Right. Uric acid can create issues like gout. It can also create kidney stones. So it's just a matter of what your body is doing with this stuff. Is it depositing it in joints? Is it all clumping together in the kidneys as the body is trying to get rid of it? That's going to vary greatly from person to person. But it's not just about the excess calcium. It's not just about the uric acid. It's also about the concentration of the liquid as it goes out. So both of those things have to be in place for those stones to create. So sometimes you don't have to fix everything that's going so wrong if you can dilute the urine a little more and keep it from clumping together.
Be cool if those stones could form a diamond.
Right.
And then you could pee out diamonds.
And then that pain might be worth it.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be a high dollar stone.
People be screaming out in front of the pawn shop every day. I'm almost there. Just a minute longer.
Okay. Christina, how can you keep getting kidney stones repeatedly if you're hardly intaking calcium and drinking tons of water?
So that's a little bit what we just talked about. So it doesn't really matter the amount of calcium that you're consuming. And there's also a lot of calcium in a lot of things that you probably don't realize. You're probably thinking that calcium is just dairy, like a lot of people do. And that's just not the case. Calcium's in a lot of stuff. But as we see, and this is the thing I wanted to hit on with the electrolyte deficient person, that a lot of times when minerals are low and the body doesn't have, it's not getting what it needs from the food, it'll just steal it from you. So, calcium can come out of bones and all that when the body needs it.
Mm-hmm. There's lots of calcium in your bones.
Yeah, it's handy there. Mm-hmm. So the body needs stuff. A lot of times it'll also be looking for phosphorus and stuff in the tissues and bones, and it'll pull that out, and then the calcium just kind of falls off, and then it's floating around free. So now you're peeing out tons of calcium, even if you're not consuming a lot of calcium. And so that can be an issue. Also, if you're drinking tons of water, where's it going? You know, so that's kind of what we covered. So you need to figure out where your water's going. See if you're balanced in that catabolic, anabolic state, and then you'll get an idea of what's going on.
Patty from Fargo, North Dakota. I have a kidney stone the size of a large walnut. What to do? Help.
She's Scottish.
She is a little Scottish. I was trying to do the normal thing. It didn't work.
Patty, don't pass that. Wow. Don't pass that stone, because there'll be a lot of screaming involved. And they talk so much. A lot of people do the thing where they're doing the ultrasound shockwave thing, where they like break it apart with ultrasound waves, and then they can make those stones smaller so that they're easier to pass. And then maybe you pass like 30 or 40 of them. I don't know how that works.
Better than one, I guess.
Right. But, and there's also, they do surgery stuff to remove them. And I don't know stuff about all of that. But there are things that the medical community does to break things up, to make them smaller. But you don't want to pass that. And the thing is that the stones don't really pose any trouble until they get stuck in that ureter tube that goes from the kidneys down to the bladder. And that's when it gets stuck and blocks the flow, is when, hey, I'm going to do some screaming, and my neighbors are going to call 911 because they think I'm getting murdered.
Would malic acid help in this case?
You know, I don't know if it helps as much with kidney stones as it does with gallstones.
Gotcha.
But I do know that, because some people say you can't melt a kidney stone or even a gallstone, but a lot of people say, hey, use this, and you can. And when I had kidney stones, I was able to melt them. And this is when I first started doing all this stuff, and It was an amazing pain. It's like undescribable. But I guess a lot of people did in the beginning of the show
describe it pretty well.
But I was able to use things to melt it down. And a lot of people will say to use concentrated cherry juice, and that can help melt things down. But again, I think it depends on the type of stone and what's causing it. Some people use vitamin C and probably in the form of ascorbic acid that's acidifying to try and melt things down. But other people say that there are issues with vitamin C with some people that can create more oxalates, and then stones can be formed from those oxalates. So it's hard to know without knowing what the stone is made of, what the exact step would be to melt one down. But it is clear to us the steps to keep from having them come back and back over again is to make things more diluted so it's not such a problem.
Dana from Avon, Ohio. It's a combination of things, not just calcium. You have to catch a stone and have it analyzed to find out the cause and go from there.
Right, so we talked about that some. Good job.
Tawny from Tulsa, Oklahoma. How long does it take to pass kidney stones? I had an ultrasound show them in my kidneys a few weeks ago. Still painful and wonder if they are moving or stuck.
They're stuck. Next question.
Oh, gosh.
No. So a lot of times you won't even know they're there because they're just in the kidney. And they're in there. They're not causing any trouble. They just want to go about their business and get bigger. But it's when it gets, starts getting things stuck is when it's the problem. So, who knows? There's such a wide variety of variables that can dictate whether you're even going to try and flow out or whatever, so that I don't have an answer for that at all.
All right. Roxanne from Upland, California. Obesity plays a big role for kidney stones and liver failure. Salt, sugar, and alcohol to avoid.
No. Next question. No, I see what she's saying, because the thing is that a lot of people that are dealing with obesity issues got that way from really high insulin levels. And they got the high insulin levels from eating a lot of sugars and carbs. And of course, we know that eating sugars and carbs is going to pull calcium out of the tissues into the blood. And then, if you're peeing out calcium all the time, then there's a lot more stuff that happens. So I see why she would say that, but being overweight in itself is not going to create any type of kidney stone issue that I know of. And salt is actually needed for your body to remove urea and some of that uric acid issues. So, you know, cutting down on salt and electrolytes is not always such a great idea when you're trying to avoid stones.
Adrian from Charlotte, North Carolina. I've had colicky kidney stones twice. The pain is unreal. Is it colicky? Is that colicky?
Okay. Sure. True. And that when they say the colicky, that's when, okay, it's blocking up tubes and stuff, and here's some pain for you.
Oh, I was thinking of colic, like a baby.
Is the colicky same baby, yeah, it's not blocking tubes, but I think that the baby is disgruntled.
Yeah.
And when you have this pain, you are disgruntled. Okay. Maybe that's why they call it that.
I didn't know what colic was, if colic is the pain or what. Okay, okay. Learning stuff every day, people. Wendy, I had an 11-millimeter stone removed surgically due to the fact it was sitting at the base of the ureter at my bladder. I was in mild pain for 3 days, and then all at once the pain was so severe it made me think I was going to die. I went to the ER at 4 a.m., jacked up on Daludid?
Pain medication,
yes.
Drug,
yes,
strong.
Something. They sent me home with the instructions to go to my urologist at 8 o'clock. By 9:30, I was in surgery. The only other stone I've passed was done in 7 hours. Tawny, who she's referring to in an earlier question, I think the travel must be governed by the size of the stone. I know this all goes back to digestion in some form. If your kidney stone is determined to be largely calcium in composition, then it is fair to say your body isn't digesting calcium in a way that is able to be absorbed for its intended purpose. How can this be corrected naturally? I've heard that if you drink olive oil and raw lemon juice in combination, it can actually dissolve stones. True or false? On that same note, Briani from Brisbane, Queensland, Australia says, what do you think of the olive oil lemon juice flush?
So, lots of stuff there. And Wendy was asking, she said, is it a sign that calcium is not
being... Oh, she wasn't making a statement.
Yeah, she was asking.
She was
it... Oh, it's not. So it's not always a situation where you're not digesting calcium and that's why you're peeing so much of it out. It can also be situations like we talked about before. As far as the lemon juice, olive oil thing, I know that that's more popular with gallstones, and I have heard that olive oil has the ability to melt stones, but. And I think we're going to get into gallstones here now, so we can talk about this too. But I found some research that indicated that this olive oil flush thing that people do with lemon juice can help push stones out because the large amount of fats all at once are forcing your gallbladder to say, hey, there's fats in here, so you need bile. So I'm going to do everything I can to squeeze whatever I got out so that you can use it to emulsify this large bolus of fats that you have consumed at once. So, and they explain that that's why that can be successful. The problem with this is that if you do this, it can also flush a lot out of the liver. And a lot of people will use this as a liver flush. And if you do a liver flush when bile is not flowing, there's no exit strategy for all those toxins that you're flushing out of the liver. And then it can, all of that can go onto the kidneys. And the kidneys are like, I got to deal with all this. And then you can have kidney failure because the kidney's trying to deal with all these toxins at once. So anytime somebody wants to do something like this, I'm always like, you know, you really want to get bile moving before you do any kind of thing that's going to flush out the liver, because then there's an exit strategy. And maybe talk about B-Flow a little bit, Will, and how we use that, and that's like a more gentle way to at least get bile moving at first.
Yeah, I mean, the strategy itself of like challenging yourself by drinking, like, or challenging your gallbladder by drink and digest a cup of olive oil, it's like, oh, you're not working that well, huh? How about this? How about, you know? It's like you're already not like emulsifying fats well, so like a boatload of olive oil. Which the one time that I did this was probably the most nauseating thing. It was worse than when I was deep sea fishing and got super seasick when I was 10. It was worse than that. It was like that plus itchy all over. You know, it was really rough. So we much prefer using a product called BeatFlow, which is Just like mostly, there's a few different ingredients in it, but the most active ingredient is the juice from the leaves of beet greens.
Right.
So that just does something really nice to the bile and makes it have an easy consistency where it can flow better.
Yeah, it kind of thins it out. And a lot of people have bile that's too thick.
Which is what a gallstone is. It's like crystallized bile.
Right.
Exactly. So beet flow can directly work on that in a really gentle way rather than like slamming a cup of oil in there and making this huge demand on a system that's already not working well.
Right. So If that's important to you to do that, then the suggestion is just use beet flow or some other type of beet green product, not a beet root product, because it just does not work the same. The green, the juice of the greens needs to be in there in order to get it to thin out. So as we go into this, let's talk about gallstones just for a second before we get into the gallstone questions. And what the gallbladder is a lot of, especially the medical community, just looks at it as a sac where the bile is stored. And when we eat food and the acid is mixed with that food, as it leaves the stomach, we drop bile on to neutralize the acidic food. And then it doesn't go screaming through the body because it's too hot and it can let everything break apart. We can pull everything out of it. So it's important. But when that bile leaves the liver, because it's made in the liver, and it goes down into the gallbladder and it's stored there, the gallbladder also concentrates this bile so that it's more effective. And a lot of people that are dehydrated, you know, the body, if it needs water somewhere else, it can be rescued from the kidneys or even from the gallbladder and put back into other places that it may need it more. But if the gallbladder's job is to concentrate that bile so that it's more effective, if it also becomes dehydrated or that bile is more thick and it's just not moving as well, then that concentration can end up turning into stones, and that becomes the trouble. Mm-hmm. So let's go into the questions, and then we'll talk about ways to make sure that bile is moving. Because as long as it's moving and it's not so thick and sticky, then it won't get stuck there in the gallbladder. And as it concentrates more and more, then it's just going to turn into those stones. So the most important factor is to keep the bile moving.
All right. Amber from Clare, Michigan. One, why does working out sometimes trigger my gallbladder attack? Two, I've read, maybe from you, apple juice or apple cider helps ease some of the pain. Why? And three, I'm in pain right now. Can Will come rub my neck? I'll settle for Kenna McEnroe.
Will?
We're doing a podcast right now.
Oh, Amber, we're doing a podcast right now, he says. Yeah, but I guess he's going to come after. Yeah. I don't know.
We'll see.
He might be able to catch a plane today.
Right. But do you have any thoughts on, I mean, could it be that her working out is, you know, she's sweating out all of her liquids and things become more dehydrated?
Yeah, there's that. There's the could be putting herself in more of a sympathetic nervous system thing, depending on how intense the workout is, which would kind of deprioritize digestion. You're losing salts while you're working out also.
Sure.
So, yeah, there's a number of different things happening at the nervous system and electrolyte level that could make your gallbladder and freak out.
Yeah. We'll explain it more when he gets there to rub your neck.
Oh.
What about the apple juice?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So,
or apple cider vinegar?
Yeah. The other one? Well, a lot of people say that malic acid can be used to melt gallstones, and I don't know if that's true. I have heard of people having success with it, so I'm okay with them saying that, and I'll go along with it. But malic acid is highest in apple juice, so some people use that if they don't want to use like a malic acid supplement.
Yeah, I mean,
and apple juice has lots of sugar.
Right. So then, you know, you don't want to go that route and cause more trouble that way. Is that what you're going
to
say?
Yeah, malic acid's not expensive or hard to find.
Like, right.
So if you're trying to keep your sugar low, you might want a supplement.
Right.
Lena, got my gallbladder removed in October and one out of the blue... Wait. Oh. Got my gallbladder removed in October, and out of the blue, suddenly I have major gluten allergy sensitivity that I've never had before. Before. Are they related? Before.
Damn blade
that I've never
shake.
Had before.
Yeah, I'm going to let Will talk about this, and maybe Maybe this has something to do with digestion.
Yeah, it might have something to do with digestion. So, like, we've talked about in our previous episode on food sensitivities
and
allergies that glutens and other lectins and things that can cause allergy reactions are not usually a problem if your digestion's working well. Like, if the intestinal mucus is present, it'll block most of the lectins and things that can cause these allergy reactions. So when you get rid of your bile supply, all of a sudden you just have acidic food sludge going through your intestine, and it totally changes the ecosystem inside there and can, like, definitely singe and burn and change the whole mucus lining of the intestines. And all of a sudden now all those lectin allergies and glutens can be a big, big problem.
Right. So, you know, the stomach acid is the first part of digestion, but all those nutrients are not really broken down, or that food is not really broken down into elemental nutrients like amino acids, vitamins, minerals. It's not broken down into those nutrients until the bile comes and meets with that acid, and it's the opposite pH is meeting together that creates this sizzle and kind of breaks all of that food apart. So without a gallbladder, and we really should talk about this a little bit in this episode, since so many gallstone people, and they're probably thinking, well, I'll just have my gallbladder removed, and people that already have had it removed. Once the gallbladder is removed, digestion is turned off. It's no longer functioning the way that it should. And there are steps that you can take to improve it and have better digestion, but it's never going to be the way that it was intended to be, because that bile has to be there to create that sizzle and break all that food apart. So if the bile's not there, and then not enough of it, because it's not stored to accumulate, then the food is not elemental nutrients anymore. It still has its identity, and all those lectins are still intact, and now a food can create a food allergy, and that's kind of why that comes up. But if you've had your gallbladder removed, you really need to take the four-week course and learn things. We have like a whole page of just videos for people who have lost their gallbladder so they can understand how they can use, like, you know, ox bile supplements and kind of synthesize digestion that is no longer there. So take that course, and it's free, and learn. And if you're thinking about having your gallbladder removed, then go ahead and don't. You really want to learn the steps that you can take to improve the situation without losing your gallbladder, because there are steps you can take to save that. But once it's gone, I mean, you can't pick up a gallbladder at a garage sale and put it back in. It doesn't work.
On the transplant list for a gallbladder.
Right.
You could add yourself there. Julie from Bonners Ferry, Idaho. I had terrible gallbladder attacks over 9 years ago. I drank some nasty Chinese herbal prescription tea, which I'm pretty sure saved my gallbladder, as surgery was not an option for me. But the tea did not solve my problems, as I couldn't eat prime rib or bacon or sausage
any
fatty meals. Went 7 years without prime rib. Agony. I could eat a little bacon and sausage, but not much. I also did the Master Cleanse with the olive oil, lemon juice, and garlic flesh several times, and got rid of some gallstones, but the discomfort in my back and under my rib cage did not go away for good until I learned what to do and how to fix my digestion instead of compensate for my whack digestion. So if anyone struggles with gallbladder attacks, it's well worth the effort, money, and time to learn how to fix your chemistry. For years, I thought I didn't have a digestion problem because I never had heartburn. Wrong. I understand that my gallbladder problems didn't happen overnight. I had most of the markers for gallbladder problems, several pregnancies, 5, obese, and then lost weight, a lot of weight, female, and my mom had hers removed. So my problems will not be fixed overnight. I'm over a year into following my protocol with switching it up now and again based on my chemistry, and I'm still taking 5-HCL with every meal and 3 beet flow. So if someone else out there thinks they should see results sooner than they are, do not give up. Things take time to change. A Master Cleanse for some magical shape doesn't get to the root of the problem. Work on fixing your chemistry and everything else might just fall into place. Keep up the good work. Is this one of your followers?
This is someone in the group, and she's had so much success with what she's learned and with her coach that she wants to be a coach. And
awesome.
She's like trying to learn things now. But, you know, that's the advice that is in the medical world for people who have lost their gallbladders, just don't eat any fats. Because we need bile to emulsify those fats, and if you don't have bile to emulsify those fats, then they become toxic and you can feel nauseous and lousy. That's kind of what they tell people, is just don't eat fats. But you're kind of not digesting anything else either without that bile there.
Yeah, which is makes me think of this one really important thing that you taught me years ago, and now it seems obvious, but like if someone can't digest a particular type of macronutrient like protein or fat or carbs, they shouldn't eat it until they can digest it, you know?
Right.
And just because you read like, oh no, like healthy fats are good for me now, like there may not be good for you, like if you don't have the bile you need to break it down, or if you're like really insulin resistant, any carbs are not good. So picking up a book like The Zone, like the you need 30-40-40, like carbs, proteins, fats, like, or high fat, low carb, no carb, it's never going to suit everybody. You have to look at like what is that person's digestion capable of accommodating, and what does their chemistry need, and we got to play within those bounds and work to improve.
Right, so the person's digestion really dictates what their diet should be.
Yeah. But if your body can't do that, don't just give up and say, well, I guess I'll never eat meat again. You have to have protein, so like you said, work on all the problems to fix it so you can have it.
And that, like a lot of times with clients that I'll see is, I'll say, don't change your whole diet yet. Like, we got to get the digestive system.
You need to qualify. Mm-hmm.
Right. You can't eat fats yet. You totally need them instead of sugars, but don't just stop eating carbs until we get you able to digest the fat. So don't feel like you need to make this, like, cold turkey switch to, like, a completely different way of nourishing yourself when your body's not set up to that. Because most of the times, we've pigeonholed ourselves into different dietary strategies because we felt like those were the foods that we could kind of handle. So then just to switch back as you hear something's healthier, like ripping on carbs all the time, you say, oh, I'm not going to eat any carbs anymore. Well, you may not qualify yet to do that.
Right, you know? Right.
Baby steps.
Yeah, and another thing I totally forgot that I wanted to hit on with kidney stones is that a lot of people, there's a lot of information out there about that a high-protein diet is going to create kidney stones, and you know, low-carb diet is going to create kidney stones. And you know, if you take out all your carbs, you're going to increase your protein. And if you're not breaking down that protein correctly, that's a lot more, you know, of those purine proteins that have a lot of the uric acid in there. You're going to create a lot more of that uric acid, which can create stones. But if you can break down that protein properly, it's not such a problem. And if your kidneys have water going through them correctly, it's also not such a problem. So that's another one of those things where, yes, you know, I think when the Atkins diet first came out and it was popular and everybody was trying to be on a ketogenic diet where they were making ketones all the time, that everybody was popping up with kidney stones. And, you know, high ketones all the time can provide more material that can create stones. But if, you know, water's flowing through your kidneys correctly, for most people, it's not going to be a problem anyway. So you do need both of the things there to screw yourself over. And I just wanted to hit that on.
I feel really bad for her about the bacon.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I know. Right. Bacon's delicious.
Mm-hmm. Karen from Marion, Queensland, Australia. I had my gallbladder removed 6 weeks ago, and my stomach is hard and protruded just under my boobs. Is this normal, and will it go away? Well, I have that same problem, and I didn't have my gallbladder removed, so there you go.
But if it's hard, you know, you kind of wonder, is she talking about a hiatal hernia or something? You wonder if it's an abnormal protrusion that... I mean, like, is it painful?
Maybe she drank a blender blade.
Yeah. Did you drink a blender blade?
Check that first.
But if you press on, like, under your sternum, is it painful to press on that? And if that's the case, it's possible that you could have a hiatal hernia. In our four-week course, we talk about that a little bit, and there's a video in there kind of showing exercises that you could do. So check that out and see if that's the issue for you. But, you know, I see now that we have so many people that I just had my gallbladder removed. So...
there's got to be a lot of gallbladders out there.
Right, you get one. But let's talk a little bit about steps that you could take to keep from losing your gallbladder. And we use beet flow a lot, or you know, something with beet greens. But another thing is that it appears that consuming a lot of processed foods, especially processed starches, has the ability to thicken the bile so that it doesn't flow as well. And I've also recently found some research that people that go on a low-fat diet also has the ability to restrict bile flow. And if you think about it, if the gallbladder is not being called into action as much because there's not as much fat being consumed, then it might become more stagnant and not flow as well. So that kind of makes sense, and I was excited to learn that. I'd never thought about that before. Are you excited right now
to learn
really that, Will?
I'm really excited about that.
I knew that you would be. I know, that's okay. We'll call you in when it's time to do stuff, Ken.
Okay.
All right, so
I'll just sit here and look pretty.
Yeah, you do that well. And I had somebody that sent an email asking a question. They were like, also, can we have a picture of Kenna? Do you have
anything? Are you serious?
Yeah, they wanted to know what Kenna looked like.
Oh, that's funny.
So I sent them a porn that you
But,
you know, when we see clients that don't have bile moving, which is so, so common, or maybe they're having gallbladder attacks, the first step that we always use is the beet flow to try and thin it out. But maybe you can talk about something you can put up your butt.
Well, yeah, I love talk. Well, Kenna actually is an expert.
I'm putting on my gloves right just now. Cough.
Yeah, I think that's what that whole video was about. Yeah. So you can also use coffee suppositories and coffee enemas are even stronger
than
coffee.
Don't just put coffee beans up there
after. No.
Yeah, it doesn't work. And drinking coffee doesn't do it either.
No,
it has to be
going the other way.
Right.
Yeah. And I hear the coffee is way more effective, too, for just being super amped if you do it that way.
Wow.
Right into the bloodstream.
That's going to take my morning regimen
another hour. Flip it upside down.
Right. Yeah. So if you want to get more out of the coffee you're drinking anyway... But it just has this ability to dilate the biliary pathway, which is the little tube that bile is supposed to flow through. And that's awesome because a lot of times it can be constricted. For example, if you take birth control,
right,
can block you.
Yeah, that can be another problem. So if you're having a gallbladder attack but you're also on birth control, that's a problem because that birth control can be restricting the flow of bile, and that may be what it's allowing to concentrate stones.
Yeah, that's not fun.
But so that seems to be the options that work the best to get bile moving. And we see people all the time and hear from readers in the support group that say that their gallbladder pain subsides very quickly once they start using the beet flow and start to do things that can thin the bile. And maybe you can't afford supplements or something like that. Another option is to stop eating all processed food. Especially gluten. Gluten seems to be the worst at thickening the bile. And maybe slowly start adding in some fats just to kind of tell your body, hey, I'm supposed to, you know, do this a little bit. Of course, if you get nauseous, then you know you're not ready for any fats whatsoever. And you need to take other steps that are going to thin that bile so it flows better.
Yeah, and just to like kind of go over that, what I usually try to do with people is to not have to have them shove coffee up their butt if they don't need to. So I recommend like starting with the beet flow flush.
Start with a simple thing. Yeah.
Yeah, start with taking some beet flow, and then we talk about how to do the beet flow flush in the books and in the digestive course. And if that doesn't work, then maybe try a coffee suppository. There's one we recommend. It's called Zeneplex, which you can get at naturalreference.com. It's spelled X-E-N-E-P-L-E-X. So you got to like scroll down in the alphabetical list of things are there. Zeneplex. So you can try taking those. And then for an even stronger and more affordable in the long run thing, if you're going to do a lot of them, you can get a coffee enema kit and do them at your home.
Which will help you. If you buy a coffee enema kit, Will come to your door and help you.
Yeah, I do. That's a personal service. I don't advertise that, but I guess now I have.
I wouldn't advertise either.
I'm ready to walk into Starbucks and order a coffee and say, I'll take that in an enema bag to go. All right, Julie from Deport, Texas. That's funny. Okay, I have given birth twice over some years and had a kidney stone pass last summer, then developed gallstones and have had 3 attacks since December. Finally diagnosed and had my gallbladder removed last Wednesday. I will choose kidney stones and birth any day over the continuous pain and sudden attacks of gallstones.
And, you know, you look at the people, and it is common for people to have kidney stone issues and gallstone issues because there is likely an issue that is causing everything to be more concentrated, more thick, and not flowing as well. So a lot of times that's a case of, you know, are you drinking water, and where's the water going?
Sal from Rochester, New York. I've had 3 spinal surgeries and many other painful things done. By far the worst pain I have ever endured was gallstones.
Another vote for gallstones.
Yep, we're taking score here. Jenny, how is it that I've had my gallbladder removed for 10 years, but I still experience attacks just like they were before it was removed, only not so frequent? I would ask for my money back on that surgery.
Right. So once you get your money back, you won't be mad and it won't hurt anymore. No, but this is really common. We hear from people saying this all the time, and they're like, my doctor says it's in my head because my gallbladder has been removed. Yeah, but it's false. It's really there. You're really feeling it. It's really painful, and it really sucks. And if you think about it, your gallbladder was removed, but that biliary pathway was not, and bile still flows through that. And if everything was so backed up that you had to have your gallbladder removed, that the odds are great that that biliary pathway was backed up as well, and it's not flowing, and it can create the same pain as the gallbladder did. So then it becomes a step of, okay, I need to take steps to thin my bile so that it can move, and then those pains don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you fix digestion. You still need to take other steps that we talk about to fix digestion if you don't have a gallbladder, but at least the pains are gone.
Yeah, and we want to like focus on the goal with like thinning the bile. It's not that there was a problem with your gallbladder. It was the bile presence in it. And we've had this question before, like, should I still take BeatFlow even if I don't have a gallbladder? Yeah, because we were treating the bile and not the gallbladder. We're trying to get that to be liquid and like running better. So whether or not you have one, BeatFlow can still help, like, you know, with the bile flow through the liver, which is super important for detox and to get rid of these pains and stones that are happening.
Right. And I hear from clients. I just heard from one last month where somebody was like, my doctor said that my gallbladder is not functioning. And it's not always like your gallbladder broke or the batteries went out. It's just that the bile is not flowing through it, and that's what they consider functioning. And the flow has more to do with the thickness and the stickiness of the bile.
Yeah, very much like the blood in the heart. Like, a lot of times it's not the heart's issue, it's the blood trying to flow through. That's a whole other
That's
podcast.
A different one.
Yeah. We'll talk about it.
Okay, so that was it. We got all those questions. There was like 1,400 of them. But what did we learn?
Water. water flushing.
Drink it.
Yeah. Well, we learned that water flow is very important to pay attention to. Like, if you're too if you're too catabolic, you'll have most of the water go through your colon and not enough through your kidneys, so that can create accumulation of sediment in your urine and help contribute to kidney stones.
And that particular pathway flow also can cause the bile to be more thick and sticky too, because it seems that when that water is going that direction, it doesn't make it in through that gallbladder too.
Yeah, not fun. And if you're low on electrolytes in general, you may not be drinking enough water because your body's trying to keep your blood thick enough.
Right.
So that can also cause filtration problems and sediment accumulation.
And that's important. So don't just hear that the only thing that Kenna learned was to drink water, and then you go and you drink tons of water if you have kidney stones, because if your electrolytes are already low, your depression could become severe, vertigo, you know, lots of other things that we talked about on other shows.
Yeah, never listen to me.
Yeah, that's the best tip. Uh-huh. If we go by that tip, then we learned a lot today.
Exactly.
It's important to first qualify to drink more water.
Yeah, and then maybe we didn't point this out explicitly, but going through the 4-week course in digestion and learning like how to fix your digestion will help with a lot of things, rather than having to wait till you actually pass a kidney stone and then have a lab analyze what it's made of. You can look at, like, how is my system handling food? Like, am I breaking these different things down well? Right. Because if, say, for example, you're not breaking, you learn from the course that you don't have enough stomach acid and you're not breaking down proteins well, then you can think, oh, maybe these uric acids and weird proteins are accumulating.
Right.
And when I fix my stomach acid, all of a sudden now I don't have so much uric acid buildup.
Yeah, and if your urine pH is like 6.7 or something really high, you may not need to know what that kidney stone is made out of. If you're peeing out that much calcium, odds are that calcium is involved. Because a lot of times when people have the stones analyzed, it's like it was 40% oxalate, 40% calcium phosphate. You know, so, you know, there can be a mixture of issues too. Mm-hmm. But if your urine pH is that high, you know that's at least one contributing factor, and you can start to work on that.
Yeah. And then going through the rest of the course, you'll learn, like, do you have issues of impaired bile flow? And you'll be able to identify them and take steps to correct them. So all in all, if you can get that whole irrigation system of your digestion working well, which you can learn how to do through the course, then it'll handle most of these issues.
Yeah. So I think you have some places to start with there. So do that, and then if the course creates more questions, then we'll get to hear them.
If you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the free 4-week digestion course at kickitinthenuts.com, or you can check out Will's website as well, mybodyofknowledge.net, and he's got some great information on there as well.
And if you learned anything today, go to iTunes and give us a review, because that helps us spread the word a lot, and then we like you.
And if you want to see what I look like, go to my porn page. I'm kidding.
And watch Office Space.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. 'Cause I know a place where the sun is on.